Okay, let's try that again. I think it's working now. Unfortunately, computer are a little wonky tonight. Just picked the right time. Anyway, you missed my entire previous comment, so I'll just repeat myself. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for this, the Limemark Technical Net. Limemark Technical Net has been going on for 43 years now. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all get together and hopefully share our experiences and understandings. We try and teach each other some things, learn from each other, and entertain each other. So I hope you've all kind of come around the radio tonight and are planning to participate in another attempt at that. Let me drop for a second, and this time I will give you the usual link. Okay, if you want to reach me and you can't do it via the radio, then email is as good as any. This would either be for mailbag questions. Mailbag questions were questions very popular in the olden days when people couldn't get on to the technical net but wanted to ask some questions. So they would email Mel, K2KEY, and later on John, KC2WGB. And they would collect them and read them to Dick, K2RIW, and people would either listen in on the radio or on the audio stream, or wait until later in the week when Mike, KC2NJI, puts it up on his archive site. So, if you want to reach me, for any topics of discussion, if you would like to discuss a topic that you're well-versed that's in the news, if you'd like to be part of a conversation, or if you'd like to just sit back and have other people talk about it and listen, you can give me those suggestions via email. Also, puzzles. We're always looking for puzzles, preferably those that are not solvable by Googling it in 10 seconds. But if you have them, please share them, and if I find a way of introducing them into the technical net, I will try my best. Also, if you have something space-related that you would like me to poke Paul on the shoulder and have him take a look at, something space or NASA-related, then please email me. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Or you can go directly to Paul. He's available. SpaceNetReport@gmail.com will get you into his email address. So that's the email. Let me drop for a second, and I'll continue with the link. Okay. I have a link page. Every week I kind of collect, cut and paste a bunch of articles and videos and things that I think are of interest to the crowd. And I post them on my link page. You can reach it 24/7. It's available forever and ever and ever. You just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to my link page. There is a chat room. Lately, it's been kind of quiet, but you never know. It might wake up again. You can get to it directly by just typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. Again, chat.ac2gs.com. Let's see. We also have, theoretically, an audio stream, which is not really working right now, and as time goes on, I will try my best to reinstate it. But when it's available, you type in technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you the audio stream. And I keep that alive 24/7 as well, so anything that goes on in Glen Oaks, usually you can hear if you have an internet connection. And then there's the archives of my KC2NJI. It's called AmateurRadio.tv. It has over a million visitors, and it has archives of this technical net going as far back as September of 2006. So please avail yourself of it. So that's it for the link. Let me drop, and we'll discuss tonight's plan. Okay, for tonight, we will be asking for questions of a technical nature. The first few questions I would prefer to be amateur radio related. As always, we are open to discussing any aspect of science and technology. I would prefer the more esoteric technology to be later in the net, because this is an amateur radio technical net. But, you know, whatever you ask, we'll try our best to answer or give you some guidance and source materials to look up the answer. Then at 10:15, Paul will come on with the SpaceNet report, and we'll wrap it all up approximately at 11 p.m. So that's our plan for tonight. But it needs you guys to participate. So if you have any questions or topics for discussion or comments, please check in, preferably amateur radio first and then non-amateur radio second. Check in, give me your first name and your call sign.
Wow, KD2VHT, Jim, good evening.
Good evening, Jim. I thought I was going to be all by myself here. So if anyone else wants to put their name on the list, what usually, thankfully, happens is we kind of run away with a question, and it goes on and on and on. And people who are fourth and fifth on the list kind of give up and go away. So if you put your name on the list early, chances are we're not going to have that problem. So with that in mind, if anyone else has any questions or topics for discussion or comments, please feel free. Give me your first name and your call sign.
Net control. Please copy. Kilo Delta 2. Alpha Alpha Romeo. John Mobile in Nassau County. No question this evening, just joining the net.
Okay, John, glad to have you aboard. And if a question pops into your head, feel free, if there's an empty moment, to add your name to the list. But glad to have you, John. Okay, we'll try one more time before we start with Jim. Anyone else with any questions or comments or topics for tonight's technical net, please hit that push to talk and tell me your first name and your call sign.
With Amini here, but I don't have anything specific. Didn't have a time to prepare.
Okay, very good, Wes. Well, I guess it's you and me, Jim. What's today's comment or topic?
Oh boy, I thought this would be a short one, but maybe we'll have to ring it out. It was interesting. I think last week I recognized, and it was reminded when you were introducing the net this week, that my clothes dryer is exactly as old as this net. And not too many people have a 43-year-old clothes dryer, but I have one, and it works handsomely. I took it apart once and replaced a couple bearings that were maybe old, but I am not one that believes that everything that's old is better, and I'm also not one that believes everything that's new is better. I think things exist on their own merit. But I wanted to throw out the thought amongst this crowd. What do you think about those things? It's not philosophical as much as it is rubber on the road, real world. There are definitely things that are better, newer, and other things are better, older. So sorry to go philosophical, but I guess we're crossing some bridges. I'll throw it out there for conversation.
Okay, very good, Jim. By the way, hopefully the TechNet audio stream on the internet is back online. It might have dropped people out, so hopefully they'll try and get back if they need it. It's out there, so feel free. That's a good subject. I think, unfortunately, the answer is very much like Facebook used to have settings for in a relationship, out of a relationship, and one of them was it's complicated. So again, the answer I think ultimately I would choose would be it's complicated. It sort of depends upon what you're talking about. And I'm not an all or one type of a guy, so I accept the fact that life can and is often complicated. There are some aspects of technology that I believe have gotten better over time, less expensive and better. As I've mentioned repeatedly, I'm a big fan of software-defined radio, which started as a very, very expensive military design and has been progressively getting cheaper and cheaper and being implemented in a lot of amateur radio equipment. It may look like it's an analog machine, but under the hood, it's really mostly a glorified computer doing all the work. But there are things, as you mentioned, I forget, was it the washer or the dryer?
The dryer, the clothes dryer, gas powered clothes dryer. I have a much more modern washing machine, and with all the modern features, high efficiency, horizontal loading, whatnot. But the dryer won't die. It just will not die.
Okay, I mean, when you're talking about a dryer, it doesn't really need to be quite that brilliant. It just needs to kind of know how to apply heat and ventilation to get rid of moisture in the clothing and vent it in a relatively safe way. So, you know, I mean, you could have the Internet of Things. You could link it so that your cell phone will tell you when your dryer is done and such, but it's not that direly necessary. The problem, as I see it, unfortunately, and I've seen more than a few YouTubes, it's not like I'm a big appliance guy, the industry kind of made a major change in the way they look at things in the turn of the 21st century. I kind of experienced it. I have a refrigerator, and I'm reminded of the night that TechNet spent most of the night discussing refrigerator gaskets, which was a fascinating bit of non-amateur radio technology that was taken up. But I have a refrigerator that I bought in 2000, and that is still, knock on wood, going strong to this day. It is my understanding that after 2000, roughly, all the major manufacturers not only bought up all the other manufacturers, so there's only really three manufacturers in the world, but they've also really gone heavy into planned obsolescence. And it would be very difficult, my understanding, to find a refrigerator unit that would go 20 years now. They just don't build them that way anymore. The coils on my refrigerator are external. You just pull the refrigerator out from its little cubby and vacuum it ever so often, and it's great. Modern refrigerator design, for the most part, has the coils built into a cavity. So lots of luck getting to them and getting all the dirt, muck, dust, what have you, out of them. So I would tend to agree with you. There are appliances that are worth their weight in gold when they were made at a certain time. And now, although they tend to be more efficient and they have more Internet of Things built into them, the lifespan has gone terribly down. Some people out there might have different experiences entirely, but that's been my experience, and I've kind of seen it echoed repeatedly on multiple YouTubes that discuss this subject.
Very relevant points. Oddly enough, while I replaced my clothes washer, it had to be repaired a number of times that I did kind of by myself. They tend to have a failure mode with these modern horizontal drum washing machines where the circuit boards go bad, and they want to replace it with a circuit board that's equally as bad as the first one. There are some companies that will actually fix the problem and upgrade the components that fail. I've done that. Now that's reliable, but it's interesting the different expectations of reliability on equipment of household stuff, and I guess I'm trying to pull that thought process over to the to this thing that we do with the ham radio and discuss the commonalities or the dissimilarities.
Well, yeah, some of it I think is unfortunately nefarious. I think when it comes to the appliance guys, they sort of know what they're doing and they don't care because they're all doing it simultaneously. If there was one company that had appliances that lasted 20 years, then they'd get a lot more business and the others would lose a lot of business. But if all of the three manufacturers who manufacture under a half a dozen or a dozen brand names do the same thing, then there's little point in kind of focusing on one or the other. Now, my understanding is that there are a few models in almost every brand that are better than the others, unless you know an appliance repair guy who can keep you up to date with which appliance these repair guys see every day and don't see at all, lots of luck. So in the old days, occasionally you could go for a brand name. Now brand names are almost meaningless again, because now it's three companies and they just move the P, underneath the cups, and you don't know what you're getting. But I think that's an appliance thing. There are other problems with modern technology that some people complain about and other people don't care. Because modern technology has automated the entire process of manufacture, surface mount devices are on everything. Automated placement of components and soldering of the components is all automated. It makes it a lot cheaper to manufacture. It allows for a much smaller, more compact package. But the downside is it makes it a pain in the backside to repair. If you need a real human being, if you want to swap out a board, that's fine. You buy whatever they're asking for the board, you swap it in, you swap it out, and you're done. But if you actually want to repair things, it's very difficult to get to the little surface mount devices. They're pea-sized. It's very difficult to desolder them without destroying them. It's very difficult to resolder a replacement without killing it. So the repairs are exponentially more difficult, but it's not, I think, out of any kind of evil intent on anyone's part. It's to give you what the consumer tends to want. They would prefer smaller, lighter, more efficient devices. They don't really think of the downside of repairing it, especially now that we live in a, let me drop for a second, where we live in a disposable economy where people grow tired and look for an excuse to throw their latest, greatest gadget in the garbage and buy a shiny new one. So I think there are different forces working on different economies in different products. I do not know why the appliance industry has decided to take this road, except that I guess they make a lot of money on it this way. But it's a crying shame. But again, if anyone else has better, more expertise or some other differing opinion than me, please feel free to voice them.
Agreed. Awaiting some thoughts. It's interesting that you ventured into not conspiracy theories, but perhaps nefarious hypothesis. it's not good when you buy something and it doesn't work like you hope it would, and if it doesn't, you can't fix it so it can. And it's a recurring theme, it seems like, in most things that you buy that have some technology involved. And they want to veil failures with complexity, but oftentimes the failures are much more mundane than, bits and bytes and megahertz.
Well, once again, I think it tends to be a complicated situation because there's all kinds of different permutations. There are poorly thought out designs where the feature set came from someone who probably was suffering a hangover, and for the life of me, the worst thing is to get something new and improved and then find out that in reality it's not really new and improved. The technology is kind of the same, but they cheapened on all of the components. So now instead of something that's sturdy that did A, B, and C, you have something that's cheap and plasticky that does A, B, and sometimes C. So that's one thing. Another thing is simply where it does what you want it to do, but it uses questionable components or questionable designs that tend to cause failure points. Different radios, certainly Andy WA2CDL, who repairs these radios, knows that there are certain radios with certain failure modes that are more common than not. So that's a design flaw, too. Then you got things that are just the lemons. I bought a piece of equipment. I bought two of them symmetrically. One worked perfectly. The other one was real flaky. So I knew that they couldn't kind of say, well, it's your Wi-Fi access point or it's your computer, because the two of them are plugged into the same thing. So I got an RMA and I got it replaced. Now the new one works. So there are lemons, faulty individuals, there are faulty designs, and then there are just people cheaping out, trying to cut the prices of things without really offering anything useful, more useful to the consumer. And there are okay places that build a better mousetrap. They might charge a little bit more for the better mousetrap. It might be worth it. So there are a lot of different ways that manufacturers can screw up.
Interesting.
True. No doubt. It's an interesting concept, and not always so predetermined. You know, sometimes your design that somebody thinks is going to work well is not going to work well, but I think it's something we should, as consumers / citizens, should pay more attention to and call those out who are coming up short.
I agree. Wesley recognized. I heard you, Wesley. I'll get to you in 1 second. The trouble is, you know, people have their own problems, more immediate problems, I guess. And so there are guys out there who will complain about anything and everything, and they'll get things. I know guys who can call up and complain in just the right frequency and have shiny, new, more expensive replacements given to them for free. This is not the average person, which is probably why when some manufacturers bump into these particular fellows, they just hand them whatever they want and tell them to get away and not bother them anymore. But most of us tend to kind of grumble and be annoyed quietly for fear that, you know, we will end up on the other end of those robocall things where you never actually talk to a human being, or if it is a human being, you get the strong sense that they've been lobotomized prior to employment. Anyway, let's hear what Wesley has to say on the subject. Wesley?
No, not on the subject, I'm sorry. I have another something, but continue, please.
KD2AMZ for a comment.
Yes, Mike.
When you get those robocalls, I'll just listen. I'll try to repair a TV camera. The magic word to get to a real person is, you know, can I help you? What is your problem? The computer says. You tell yabba dabba do, and it goes right straight to a person, at least on Amazon.
Okay, I guess it when it finds words it can't possibly correlate with real words, it goes home to mama. I unfortunately, I don't know, maybe because I was born and bred in Brooklyn, my method of talking to a live human being, I ask for a live human being, and when it obviously does not respond correctly, I then simply use about 45 obscene words in a row. That tends to knock it into a human being, thankfully.
Except what they're doing is they're programming the artificial intelligence to recognize, let's call it colorful language, but they have yet to recognize yabba dabba do. I guess they never heard of the Flintstones.
Okay, I guess you could try a whole bunch of nonsense word phrases. If I find myself in this situation, I will try it. I don't think you can necessarily go purely by Amazon, because there's a lot of manufacturers out there that have Very similar, but slightly different programs, software to make our lives miserable. And unfortunately, it kind of gets worse for me, at least in my experiences. Even when I end up talking to a first-level technical help person, if I can't get to a third-level technical help person, I have not found them terribly useful. Occasionally, while I'm being rotated from one person who can't help me to another person who can't help me, I actually try a bunch of things and solve the problem and end up telling the guy on the other end what the solution is if some poor fool after me calls up asking about this particular problem. So it's a very thankless task dealing with technical help. The only real practical use I've ever found with them is to get an RMA to return a product.
Absolutely. I go through the same thing the first guy. Hello, how you doing? Thank you for picking up the call after 45 minutes. By the way, I'm an electrical engineer. Are you an engineer? No, fine. Transfer me right up. I don't waste time.
Okay, I mean, that's fine and dandy. And I haven't kind of pulled credentials because I don't have any electronic credentials. But, you know, I have attempted in the early days when I didn't know that how useless everything was to explain that I've tinkered around with the computers for 30 years and probably know a great deal about the subject. And, of course, didn't impress a single one of these people who just read a list off of a computer screen. So sometimes they kind of they tell me, they say, I'm terribly sorry, but my job requires me to just read this list to you. I realize that you're going to be annoyed by it, but that's what I have to do to keep my job. So I say, okay, I understand that at least. So some people are honest that way, but I have never really been able to successfully get people to jump automatically. You have to put in a little bit of unnecessary work to have them go up the you know, to their managers and their manager's manager.
Well, anyway, I just thought I'd mention, yes, there are methodologies of getting through these people. Most of these people are just reading from a script. I get it. You know, but yabba-dabba-do, magic word. Next time, try it. See what it gets you. Anyways, there's other people on. I don't want to hog the net.
Okay, I'll scribble it down. Well, I was a big fan of the Flintstones anyway. I still remember Friday night at 7 o'clock watching cigarette commercials on the Flintstones. Anyway, anyone else with any comments about this subject?
I'll hop back in saying it's intriguing that the solution might be making up words, because people seem to be commonly making up words or unmaking words these days, and I like that. Yabba Dabba Doo has some traction. I'm liking it. Thanks for considering my question.
Okay. Probably along with trying Yabba Dabba Doo, I will try. I was a big fan of the Superman comics when I was a little kid, and it was an imp from the fifth dimension called Mickey as Piddling. So I'll probably try that as well.
Sounds good. Thank you, Roy. Back to that.
Okay. Once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Limark Technical Net. And the fuel that runs the Technical Net is questions and topics and comments. So if you guys think that you've landed on some kind of a broadcast show where we just entertain you, I'm sorry. We don't. There's no monologues here, or at least very few, hopefully. With that in mind, if anyone out there has any questions, preferably early in the night of an amateur radio-related topic, please hit that push-to-talk button and give me your name and your call sign.
In one, why do I? Thanks.
Intuition not related.
Okay, I recognize Hank and Wesley. Hank, what's your comment?
Well, just on the comment about the customer service line being relatively useless. 15 years ago, I bought an Optima battery, and had the appropriate charger with the appropriate type of charging algorithm built into it, and the battery was venting, which it shouldn't be doing at the particular algorithm voltages that are applied based on its state of charge. Let me drop it. So I called Optima, and they tried telling me I didn't know what I was doing, and I pulled the licensed aircraft mechanic card out of my wallet and said, you know, are you really telling me that I don't know how this works and this is supposed to work? And it went up the scale three times to three different levels, and finally somebody decided to send me a new battery.
Doc, all's well that ends well, I guess, but that's the incredibly annoying reality of the world. Once upon a time, the technical desk was manned by guys who were involved in the technology, and they didn't have a computer screen to rely on, so they had to rely on their experience, sometimes good, sometimes indifferent. You get that to a degree still today. There are some places where they just haven't modernized, fortunately. MFJ is one of them. I contacted MFJ to get some information. Unfortunately, then you're kind of dependent upon the guy who picks up the phone. The first guy that picked up the phone just made stuff up. It made no sense to me, and made no sense to the next guy that I called the company asking the same question to. Unfortunately, the guy who seemed to know more than the first guy was very honest with me. He said, I could tell you how to make these connections, but if I get it wrong and I do some damage to your radio, you're going to be very upset and you're going to complain to someone. So I'd rather just not tell you how to connect it, which was honest, but not terribly helpful. Anyway, I think some people should go into business for asking the technical department questions and relaying the answers to other individuals. It would probably save the average person with a problem, technical problem, hours and hours of their time, and allow them to never hear Muzak again. So it might be some kind of a possible job opportunity for some people who are adept at it. And like I said, there are people who can successfully complain and get almost anything that they want. If you've ever bumped into guys like that, it's like another world. You know, they'll tell you stuff, but you won't believe it. But I've seen evidence. I've seen, you know, chairs replaced with new expensive chairs, laptops with new laptops, televisions replaced by newer models with more features. So there are people who are very successful in this field. Anyway, Wesley, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, first time, start from the question, not related. Who is the oldest living president of the United States, and how old he is now?
Well, anyone who reads the newspapers knows Jimmy Carter. I think he's in his high 90s. I think he's 98. And matter of fact, that's because there is a news story that's all over the place that he has entered hospice care, that he is not going to actively address any of his health problems, which probably means that he will be shuffling off this mortal coil soon.
Yeah, he was born October 1st, 1924. 1924. And I was just told by my wife, which I didn't know, she said, do you know that Carter was a nuclear scientist? Do you know, Dr. Roy?
I don't know if I would call him, quote, a nuclear scientist. What he was, my understanding, he was in the Navy, and he worked with nuclear vessels, and he took advanced training on nuclear theory because he was involved in nuclear vessels. So it's not like he was sitting there someplace in industry doing nuclear physics. It was primarily designed as part of his naval experience.
Okay, from what I have is in U.S. Naval Academy, he graduated as a Bachelor of Science class 1946-1947. And then I was looking when he was, okay, he was on U.S. Mississippi, Wyoming. It's a pretty nice history. Okay, yes. 1952, October 16, 1952, duty with U.S. Atomic Energy Commission Division of Reactor Development, Shekarazade Operation Office from November 3, 1952 to March 1953. So he wasn't long there. So he was on temporary duty with Naval Research Branch, U.S. Atomic Energy Commission in Washington, D.C. So the Navy paid him. Okay, so no, the Navy paid for his education. That was the U.S. Naval Academy to train him as a nuclear engineer. So that's about Carter. Back to you.
Yeah, I mean that's my understanding. I don't want to give people the impression that he got some doctorate and went into theoretical research or something. It was a more practical degree in line with his experience as a naval officer dealing with nuclear vessels and such. He is a very, very smart guy. I think most people who kind of compare different presidents have often said that he was probably one of the smartest presidents in modern history. The problem, though, among other things, and I don't want to get into any politics whatsoever, God forbid, is that he couldn't narrow his focus. He was infamous for when he was in office as President of the United States. He put himself in charge of maintaining the schedule for the tennis court. Now, it's nice of him to do that, I guess. But one would think that a president of the United States could better spend his time elsewhere. So, very smart, but I don't think he had a good ability to kind of focus in on the important stuff and leave the less important stuff for the staff. And there were a lot of other little unfortunate problems during his administration. So, he strikes me as a kind and decent man. He built all these habitats. He's done a lot of charitable work through the years, and I wish him well. He's, again, a smart guy. I'm not going to say that he's not. I don't know him personally. I don't know any of the presidents personally, which is probably a good thing.
Okay, I'm looking at energy density extended reference table. Which of the fuels, or possible fuels, is the best one, not the best one, has the biggest energy density, which would actually mean it would be the best efficient fuel of all of the fuels? Back to you.
Well, I'd say antimatter. The problem is, who do you get to hold on to it until you need it?
That is correct. Absolutely, absolutely correct. Antimatter. It's almost 19. 90 billion megajoule per kilogram. Okay, and then I was thinking, which of the fuels is more efficient or has more energy from the table? Is it gasoline mixed with oxygen, or is it hydrogen plus oxygen?
WS2N? Yes, Paul.
Methane is more dense, so that's why they like the methane for certain applications. Hydrogen has, more kick, but you need much larger tanks.
have a high density with the methane. And actually, the same holds true for kerosene. That's even more dense, but of course, there's problems with the soot that comes off of it. More, you know, each fuel has an advantage or disadvantage, but that's why I thought Leslie was asking. I thought he was asking for fuels that exist today. Antimatter really doesn't exist yet. So I was going to go with methane. And then even kerosene. But that hydrogen is high, you know, you get more power out of hydrogen, but of course of the density ratio, you need much larger tanks. Back to you, Ron.
Okay, so you say hydrogen has more power than gasoline?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's one of the reasons that, among others, that the space shuttle was run on hydrogen, liquid hydrogen, or your second stage. Most of your, a lot of your second liquid stages ran on hydrogen. The problem is, of course, with hydrogen is it becomes corrosive if it stays there too long. So, you know, if you don't use that second stage, you know, after a day or so, you could have a problem. But depending on, again, the application, it's definitely more powerful. I read Weston.
So, Dr. Ray, so is it hydrogen or is it gasoline that is stronger? Let me use the word stronger.
There is more energy per mass in hydrogen gas than in gasoline. Of course, we're kind of leaving out the important stuff. It's oxygen is part of the reaction as well. You know, fortunately, we live in a world that has 20% of the atmosphere being oxygen. So you tend not to have to worry about it. But in outer space, you do have to worry about it. So it's not purely whether it's hydrogen fuel or gasoline fuel. You also have to sometimes function in the additional oxidizing agent, which is usually, on this planet, oxygen.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not much different. Gasoline plus oxygen is 14.3 megajoules per kilogram, and hydrogen plus oxygen is 13.4. So the difference is one-tenth. Back to you.
Are you sure about that? I always got the idea that the difference was probably more like 2-1.
Yes. There is a table in Wikipedia, energy density extended reference table. So you actually type energy density extended reference table.
Okay, but according to that table, it's more like 2-1 hydrogen versus gasoline.
I'm trying to find it. I know that I made the note, and that was what I was talking from the note. Gosh, it's a very long, long table, very long table. I've noticed, and I was surprised. Yeah, hydrogen plus oxygen, 13.4. Gasoline plus oxygen, 13.3.
Okay, I just Googled the same thing, and Google seems to think that actually it's almost three times. It says, I have this entry, I typed in energy density hydrogen versus gasoline. And I get from the Department of Energy, the energy in 1 kilogram of hydrogen gas is about the same as 2.8 kilograms of gasoline. So that would make it almost 3-1.
No, it doesn't. Well, it does, but it doesn't. The thing is, the gasoline is measured in gallons. So, and the hydrogen is measured in kilograms. So there was a comparison, not per liter of gasoline, but per gallon. So that's the three times the difference comes from.
Well, but I wasn't talking in terms of volume. I was talking in terms of mass.
Well, in terms of mass, says hydrogen plus oxygen, known Wikipedia, 13.4. And there is a note that from the introduction of rocket propulsion by Miller Catherine on February 21, and then I'm going to go to gasoline and oxygen. Gasoline and oxygen doesn't have a link to it, but it doesn't have a link to it. So from that table, actually shows that it's 1/10. Back to you.
Okay, well, I guess the Department of Energy source. I'm conceiving of it as units of mass of the fuel, not of the oxygen. They both require oxygen. If you factor in the weight of the mass of the oxygen, that makes sense in space, but not really on Earth, where you don't really need to supply the oxygen. You just apply the atmosphere, and it supplies its own oxygen. So the equation that I'm seeing from the Department of Energy is purely the mass of hydrogen versus the mass of gasoline in terms of kilograms. That the amount of energy released for 1 kilogram of hydrogen is approximately the same as 2.8 kilograms of gasoline, not factoring in the mass of the oxygen involved as an oxidizing agent. So, yeah, it depends on the situation. In outer space, you have to factor in the oxygen because it's just as important. On the planet Earth, unless we really kill this planet, the oxygen is relatively free.
WB2KW3?
Yes, Cap.
Okay, I'm just proposing that there's something that we have not considered, and that is the practicality of using these fuels. If we take gasoline, we just kind of put it in a container and just, you know, don't let the vapors get out there because they're explosive. If we're talking about handling hydrogen, because it's these little teeny tiny molecules, you've got to be very careful of your plumbing because any slight gap is really large compared to the size of the molecules of hydrogen.
Yes, Ken, I agree with you entirely. We didn't really discuss that aspect tonight. We have in the past. There have been many Sunday night discussions of future for devices that run on hydrogen as opposed to other fuels. We kind of broached the absurdity, the most absurd high-density energy material is antimatter, which is available in very small amounts in cyclotrons and such. They use them. There's no way of storing it because, obviously, what the heck do you store it in? Anything that you could store it in is going to cause that big explosion. So, theoretically, if they're charged, you can put them in a magnetic bubble, but the magnetic bottle has to be 100% secure because if anything leaks, you'll get thermal runaways and something that will make Hiroshima, Nagasaki, look like a party. So, I agree with you. Hydrogen is a much, much, much more difficult fuel to use cheaply. It requires a lot more engineering, especially now. But antimatter, although the most energy dense, are exponential levels of absurdity beyond that. There is no real way of containing more than an anti-atom or two. And then that will just collide with something and explode.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Okay. So I checked. The table is in megajoules per kilogram. So we have... You quickly type energy density extended reference table in Wikipedia. Energy density extended reference table. is going to show up the table. So it's megajoules per kilogram. What units do you have from Department of Energy?
I don't know. It just says, you want the address? It's a long address. If you just Google into Google, energy density, hydrogen versus gasoline, it, at least for me, is the top response. It's just basically, I'll send you the link if you want the link. It's the title apparently is Hydrogen Basics Alternative Fuel Data Center. But I don't know the exact link because it's probably very long and it's being shortened in the Google page.
No, I ask you what unit that energy is listed there, what unit. I have megajoules per kilogram, so it would be much easier for you if you put in your browser Wikipedia energy density extended reference table, it's going to show up. So in megajoules per kilogram, it's only one-tenth of difference. Especially when we're talking about the hydrogen, that there is a number 5 on it, which is sent to the February 21, 2021, which is a rocket propulsion PDF. So that must be right, 13.4. As far as the gasoline is 13.3, but the list shows hydrogen plus oxygen, not hydrogen by itself. Hydrogen plus oxygen, and then gasoline plus oxygen. That's what it shows. Back to you.
Well, once again, I'm just telling you what I found. They don't mention the units. The way that they phrase it is the energy in 2.2 pounds, 1 kilogram of hydrogen gas is about the same energy as in 1 gallon, which is 6.2 pounds or 2.8 kilograms of gasoline. And my assumption is, once again, because oxygen doesn't really factor into Earth-based combustion, you do not have to supply the oxygen, so you do not have to consider the energy density of the oxygen that you're not really storing or supplying. You're just opening it up to atmospheric conditions, and the oxygen is being used up. So that's where I'm getting it from. I think we're kind of really kicking that dead horse as more than it ever deserves.
You're absolutely right.
I concur.
Okay. So my next question is, what is the pressure in the chamber of the pistol? So when the bullet explodes, the projectile is sent, what pressure is being released there?
You want the absolute number of the pressure? Because it's different for different amounts of gunpowder. The more gunpowder you put in an enclosed space, the higher the pressure you're going to develop. I mean, that's the difference between a little pea shooter, 22, and 45.
No, it's average. In average. You don't know, I can give you the round number.
Okay, I never really got into guns that much. Actually, to a small degree, I did. I got myself a subscription to Guns and Ammo, but unfortunately, I found it rather boring. Technology really has not advanced in the field that much. So my expertise was in cap pistols as a child. So I don't know how much the average pressure buildup in the chamber from the ignition of gunpowder might be.
A typical bullet is 18,000 PSI. Now, when we compare it, oh, by the way, hydrogen, Japanese were able to make the storage for the hydrogen, for their hydrogen cars, that is only 30% bigger than the regular gasoline for the same value of fuel, right? But anyhow, so we have 18,000 psi, and then comparing to the single stroke two pistons regular traditional motor chamber, with one power stroke per three. How much is the pressure
The Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, note number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
I'm sorry, Wesley, but the link was talking in the background. I didn't get the end of your question.
What is the pressure in the combustion chamber of the single piston traditional motor?
Again, not really knowledgeable that much about the internal combustion engine, as I probably should be. I'm sure it's significantly less than a bullet. We get into sort of the same situation that we've discussed in the past about a lot of things. The difference between a gun and an engine is an engine, it keeps on producing those high pressures repeatedly, endlessly, until you stop the darn car. Whereas, for the most part, you're not going to do that with a gun. Even some assault rifle. You can get higher intensities for shorter intervals of time because the duty cycle is far lower in the case of a gun. Yes, Ed.
Just joined in and I'm fascinated. Question?
Okay, Wesley, you want to repeat the question for Ed? Ed knows a lot about, I'm sure, internal combustion. I'm certain he knows a lot about guns.
What is the pressure inside of the traditional single cylinder one piston engine?
I do not know, but I can give you an educated guess of about 3,000 to 5,000 PSI.
That is correct, between 3 to 5. No, the reason that I'm asking all the question is for the whole week, usually I didn't pay attention to the engines. It's not my piece of cake. But for the sake in the free time, I designed the engine that uses the same force to push the piston. And then that pressure is returned back to push the piston in the cylinder back to the to be ready to have power stroke. So the difference is that instead of a 3 up positions per 1 power stroke, which is in the traditional single piston engine, I have an ignition every time that piston is up. So that's why I let me drop. So it was rather an entertaining. I've got some of the information from it. So I was cruising all of the engines, the Winkle, the Stirling engine, and plenty of others. And then I was interested: what is the efficiency? What is the compression ratio? What is the fuel usage? Of course, we're moving to the electric motors right now, and hopefully, we're going to end up polluting this planet. But it's an interesting subject. Back to you.
Okay, very good. I just want to add, I took the opportunity to Google once again. And according to the top answer for Google, maybe right, maybe wrong, they say it's more like 300 pounds per square inch during light loads and 1,000 pounds per square inch for full power. Anywhere to about 1,500 PSI or greater for a race engine. So, again, it's kind of different for the type of internal combustion engine that's being built for different purposes.
Wait a minute, that doesn't sound right.
Okay. I just kind of, is this the first listing on Google? Sometimes the first listing on Google is wrong, although it seems to be repeated in later entries on Google.
Imagine a car engine at full throttle. You are bringing in a fuel engine.